stuff.
First, I want to visit. I did homework.
What's that?
Yes, I did my homework. Okay, and what we were talking about last week was with Kadi and Michal and what to do. Now, I didn't find any specific addressing what to do, but I'm going to tell you what to do anyway, and I'll tell you why. So the Rama in this simon, I think Kuf Samach Zion, the one that's the first citation on the top. The Rama says that, the Mechaber says that if someone makes a bracha, and then before they eat, they interrupt with something which is not Letzorach HaBracha, which we're going to see on the next Amud, on the top of Mem Amud Aleph. The Gemara talks about what you can interrupt with. You need salt, they didn't feed the animals, you're not supposed to eat before you feed your animals, etc. But if you interrupt with something you're not allowed to interrupt with, it constitutes a hefsek, it constitutes an interruption, and you have to make another bracha. The Rama comes along and says, but if I am breaking bread for everybody, and I have eaten, and then I eat a piece of bread, okay, and I make hamotzi for everybody at the Shabbos table, and I cut a piece of bread and I eat it, and now I start to cut the rest of the bread, and one of you talks. So the Rama says that you don't have to make it, he doesn't have to make another bracha, as we explained last week. Because my bracha is everybody's bracha, and I ate, so the bracha was eaten with, and this is no different. He doesn't say, Rama doesn't spell this out, and it's no different than if I make a bracha, eat a piece of bread, and then I talk, and I want to eat more, right? We do that all the time. That's standard. Once we connect eating to the bracha, then we're allowed to talk, you know, throughout the meal.
Once anyone connects it.
So he doesn't talk about if somebody else ate, because normally that wouldn't be the case. Nobody's supposed to eat before, unless you have your own piece of bread in front of you, nobody else is supposed to eat until the botzei has eaten. Now, the Mishnah Berurah says that almost all the Achronim disagree with the Rama. They think that it's wrong, and they hold like the Beis Yosef, and that it doesn't matter if you interrupted between your eating and the bracha, then you have to make another bracha. Going so far as the Taz makes the suggestion that the person making the bracha should have in mind not to be motzi anybody who will talk in between. Because why? Because the Rama says you don't need to make another bracha. So if you're going to be machmir like those achronim and make another bracha, according to the Rama, it's a bracha levatala. So the botzeya should have in mind when he's thinking that he's not a motzi anybody who talks in between. Okay. The Archa Shulchan comes along, not surprisingly, and defends the Psak of the Rama. He really explains sort of what kind of lumnus that we have suggested. That it's basically, that the eating is for the bracha, it's for everybody, and therefore he disagrees with the Mishnah Berurah, quoting the Mishnah Berurah, and he disagrees with the Magen Avraham and the Taz and holds like the Rama. He quotes the whole discussion. In light of that, I would say the following. Number one, you should be careful not to talk in between. I think most people generally are pretty careful. They don't talk, maybe not out of knowledge, but a little bit out of ignorance, but they don't talk until they've eaten. Number two, if you did talk, I would tell you not to make another bracha, because it's something brachas lahakel. So in this case, it's brachas hamotzi is only derabbanan. Number three, what I would say is that in light of the Rama, it's appropriate for the botzeya to immediately eat. Number one, because there's no reason to introduce more hefsek between his bracha and his eating, even if nobody's talking. And number two, in case anybody should talk, it would then do away with the need to make another bracha. So by Kiddush, probably by Kiddush also. I'll tell you, yes. The only difference is, I would say the same thing by Kiddush. Pour off a little bit of drink, and then, I'd also say it depends. If you have two people at your table, you know, it doesn't take that much more. It takes another quarter of a second to pour off. But if you're talking about, you know, putting in one of those, you know, one of those things that sprays into different cups at the same time. So then I would say, you know, pour off a little bit for yourself, drink, and then pour in the rest of it. That's the conclusion of that.
So I did, in light of our discussion last week, I did that yesterday at the end.
Oh.
But it's a nice, nice group of lunch. So.
Okay, so that, yes. I mean, the alternative, by the way, by Kiddush, in general, it's harder to do with bread. It's easy to do with Kiddush, and I'm sure many of you do this. If you have a lot of people at the table, have everybody pour a little bit for themselves before, so then they don't need to wait to drink.
That doesn't constitute a hefsek.
The Gemara will talk about Mem Ra'al, but you'll have to stay tuned for that. If you need salt, if you haven't fed your dog yet, because you're supposed to feed your animals before you eat, if they need to bring something else for the bread, whatever it is. Yeah. If it's Litzorech HaBracha, because you're not supposed to eat before you do it, then even between the bracha and the food, it's not a hefsek. So, You know, the Melach case is an interesting case because there were, in Shulchan Aruch, in this siman, I believe, even though the Gemara always talks about the need of having Melach, but I forget who says that we don't need salt with our bread because our bread, you know, it's either white bread or the truth is a lot of our bread has salt in it anyway in the first place. But then the Ramah, I think, quotes a minhag that you're supposed to have salt on the table, right? Unrelated to putting it on the bread, a bris melach. But I would say that according to that, if it's only on the table because of the Ramah, I don't think it's appropriate to be master to ask for the salt between. If you need the salt to put on the bread, then, but we'll get to this, then we'll talk about it. We don't need the salt to put on the bread. The cardiologist will tell us we have way too much salt in our diet, so, yes. Yeah. All right. So now, I'd like to turn our attention to the Gemara and Lamed Tes Amud Beis. And this is, I think this is actually a wonderful teaching sugya in how we've shown him read a Gemara and read very carefully. And if you read very carefully, you could probably be bothered at least by all the questions that Rishonim asked. If I read carefully, I wasn't. I had to read Rishonim to know what questions bothered them. But I did, after reading it, I was like, yes, it's obvious when you look at the Gemara. So the Gemara starts with the following. It is on the sixth line on Daf Lamed Tes Amud Beis. Itmar, heviu lefnehem petitin ushleimen. They bring in front of a person petitim and shleimim. This is bread. We're going to assume for the moment this is bread of an identical quality. Whatever it's made of, whatever quality, whatever grade within that type of bread, meaning it could be made of wheat, it could be made of barley, was it white bread, is it, you know, whole grain bread, and so on. Whatever it is, you have petitim and shleimim. Now, shleimim are very easy to translate. What's a shleim? It means the loaf is whole. It's not broken. The question is, what are petitim? So, linguistically speaking, the word petitim is a word that you will recognize, after I point out why you recognize, when you have pita bread, which I think is kind of a funny term, pita bread, since that's saying bread. So the word pas in Aramaic is bread. The root of the word pas is pei tuf tuf. You find it in the Torah, Parshas Tzav, pasos o sof, pitim, by a minchah means to break it up into pieces. So petitim, obviously, in juxtaposition to shleimim, means not whole, it means pieces. Now the question is, what is the nature of these pieces? So Rashi writes, petitim ushleimim, Amar Rav Huna, the third line of Rashi, imratza mevarech ala petitim, if you have broken pieces of bread, they're not whole, and you have whole pieces of bread, you can make, if you want to make the bracha and eat first from the petitim, you can do that. V'im ha-petitim gedolim in ashleim, if the broken pieces are bigger, if you have a broken piece that's bigger than the whole piece, in an original loaf, obviously there must have been some type of a monster loaf, so then Rashi says, tzarach levar chaleim. So let's think about what Rashi is reading the Gemara. So number one, Rashi understands the word petitim means pieces of bread. It doesn't refer to a particular size or a relationship to the shleimim. Shleimim are whole, petitim are not whole. Now, according to Rashi, there are three possibilities when you have, I don't know what a singular is, a petit, I'm not sure what a singular is, you have a piece and you have a whole loaf together. There are three possible relationships with size. So the petitim, one could be bigger, the shleimim could be bigger, they could be the same size. So Rashi only addresses two of the cases, but the third case, the answer is obvious. If they're the same size, Rashi says, if you want to make a bracha on the petitim, you can. You don't have to, you can. You can make it on the shleimim, you make it on the petitim, whichever one. If the petitim are bigger, Rashi says, you have to make the bracha on the petitim. He doesn't talk about what if the shalom is bigger, but the answer is obvious. Well, if the shalom is bigger, of course you have to make the bracha on that, because not only is it bigger, but it's also shalom. But it sounds like for Rashi that neither petitim or shalom in itself really matters. What matters is size. That's how Rashi understands. So you have two... Now, that's number one. Number two, note that Rav Huna here is making, there are two statements, two different meanings in the word mevarech al ha-petitim. One way of translating mevarech is you must. One way of translating it is you may. Now Rashi, the way he translates it initially is, it's when the pieces are the same size, and he said mevarech al ha-petitim means you can make the bracha on petitim. Then Rashi adds in, by the way, if the petitim are bigger, then you have to. Okay, so that's how Rashi understands that the Gemara may only be addressing one, but there are two sort of pieces here. One is And the one that Rashi seems to think more likely in the Gemara is Mevarech is you can if you want. And then Rashi says that if the petitim are bigger, you have to. Okay, that's how Rashi read the Gemara.
So this is how we during the week.
Yes, correct. As will be clear in the configuration of the Gemara. There are two other days of the year that we have to deal with in this context. Number one is Shabbos. And the other one is, because that's the fun one,
Ariva Chatzeres.
Leil Pesach. Because remember, Leil Pesach, you're supposed to have a prusa.
Right.
You're supposed to have a broken piece of bread. We'll talk about it later.
Shabbos Yantif.
Shabbos Yantif goes together, and then Leil Pesach. I don't even think Sfardim do it this way. I bet you Temanim do. How many matzahs, Lenny, do you have Leil HaSeder that you, when you...
On the table?
Yeah, three.
Three.
Right.
Do two.
What's that?
The Brisker do two.
The Temanim probably do two because they would follow the Rambam. I think most Rishonim are assuming you only have two. I don't know when, I didn't have the chance to research when the three comes into practice. The reason why you only have, the Machlokas two and three in effect, is if you have, those who say you need three is because you need two whole ones for Lecha Mishnah for Yom Tov beside the Prusa. And I think most Rishonim, the Rambam I'm certainly holds this way, and that's why I say the Temanim probably do, and that's why the Briskers do. The Briskers seem to have forgotten that halacha is a historical process that takes place. Can't reach back in history, but they do that a lot with the Rambam. Temanim come by it honestly. They always follow the Rambam. So the idea is that the whole point is Leil Pesach is different because Ma Darko Shel Oni B'Prusa. It's Lechem Oni, and a poor person can't afford. He can't get the whole loaves in the bakery. He's got to take the broken ones. So if you don't make the bracha, the whole point is that your Lechem Mishnah, I've said this before, let's say you don't have Shleimim. You went to the store, you went to the bakery, and all that's left are two different loaves, and each one is missing a part. What do you do? The answer is you buy them. You have Lecha Mishnah on it. Lecha Tzila. They should be Shleimim. If they're not Shleimim, what are you going to do? You don't have any other choice. So the whole point is, Leil Pesach, you want your Lecha Mishnah not to be too Shleimim, because Ma Darko Shel Ani B'Prusa. So that's really the debate. Anyway, the Gemara will talk about Leil Pesach as well. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about what you're actually supposed to do, Leil Pesach. What is the proper way of making the bracha and distributing the matzah.
It's the definition of shelling a whole loaf. I mean, now that you buy a rye bread, that's sliced.
I think that is not whole anymore.
Okay.
That is, by the way, the machlokes, an effect of pasat snuma bakara, right, where you crumbled it up in order to eat it. But now it's crumbled and you cut into half a shelling. So sliced bread is a little bit like pasat snuma bakara. And since we pass the gagrava, the answer is it's not a shelling.
I was learning Erevin with my sandwich last week, and the Orthodox Minyan is making a Riva Chatzeres, and everybody has to do the same type of loaf. But if somebody wants to give a half a loaf of bread, and everybody else wants to give a complete loaf of bread, the Erev is invalid. This is a Pei Zion.
I don't want to, I'm not in Erevin. There is one thing in Erevin we will talk about, Erev Chatzeres, which is eating it on Yom Tov or Shabbos. But I don't want to. I thought that there are issues there only because of Darkei Shalom, not because of not Ma'akev.
Okay, Darkei Shalom. Is this valid?
I don't remember, so I can't say. I can't comment on it. Okay.
But the confession is, if a piece of it is missing, can it still be Shalom? Because you can assume that somebody took challah out of it. Whatever. It's an interesting discussion.
Okay. So that's how we read the first line, and Rabbi Yochanan says. Rabbi Yochanan comes to Amar, Shleima mitzvah min amuvcha. Really, you're supposed to do it on the Shleima. Now, I think this is the Gemara speaking, not Rabbi Yochanan speaking. I mean, this is not a continuation.
If both are in front of you. So.
I'm sorry?
If both are in front of you, is that what we're talking about?
Yeah. In other words, Rabbi Yochanan, it's the same case.
Not in general. You're obligated to make it.
Correct. No. You don't. If you don't have a, there's no. If you have the bread you have at home is not whole. You don't need to go to the bakery to the store to get a whole loaf. No.
What about the attached?
That was the discussion that Tosas had on the previous sugya, because the Gemara on Pasat Sinu Makara, the question was, what was the chiddush of Rav Chiya Baraba? What was this chiddush that you make hamotzi on? Of course you make hamotzi on it, because it's not shalem, you would think you don't make hamotzi, which is why the Baal Hamor claims, as I was mentioned last week, it's because it doesn't have tzuras hapas, you would think you wouldn't make hamotzi on it. But most of the Rishonim say, no, the chiddush was not that you make hamotzi, the chiddush is that you make hamotzi on it, as opposed to on the shalem, according to Rav Chiya.
If you have attached bread, like you have chunks of bread that were baked, made individually, but they baked together, but you can break a piece of it.
If you mean to, like, if you're talking about isos, like, which are noshos, I think those are called shalom when we split them apart. But
so
they're
so you could take, you can break it
if they were originally meant to be and they just happened to touch. Yeah. I think they're still considered shleimim. I mean, I guess if it really ripped a large chunk out of the other, maybe we wouldn't say that way.
The breakaway, that's
no, no, no. The breakaway challah was baked that way. It's intended to. It's meant to be easy to break.
Right. So when you break it away, can each one be?
No.
No. I thought
you meant two that were like. It's together in the oven by accident. Yes, that's what I. That's what I thought the question was. Yes. Yes. Okay. So, So now the Gemara. This is not Rabbi Yochanan talking. After they presented Rabbi Yochanan, the Gemara says, "Avol prusa shochitim ushleima min hasaorim." If you have the prusa is wheat, and the shleim was sa'orim, and as you might know from Rashi in yesterday's, in our parasha that we read yesterday, that sa'orim was considered machal behema. That's why the mincha sota is brought from sa'orim, because he asisa masa behema lachika farbana machal behema. So if the whole one is barley, but the prusa is chitim, divrei hakol mevarech ala prusa, everybody agrees that you're supposed to make the bracha on the prusa. Now, Rabbi Yochanan, that's the end of this statement, but that's not Rabbi Yochanan's statement, the last part. That's just the Gemara's statement, that the shechitim and sarim. But according to Rabbi Yochanan, when we say shleima mitzvah min mucha, it means you have to make the bracha on the shleima. For what's interesting is that depending on which piece of Rashi you take, so Rabbi Yochanan, we understand, says that that shleimus. And the question is, what type of pesitim are we talking about for Rabbi Yochanan? What size? So presumably, I think nobody disputes this point, it means even if the pesitim are bigger. No, are bigger. Rabbi Yochanan says you make the bracha on the shleimim. Even if the pesitim are bigger.
Well, I was talking about the Gemara. Gemara is saying the wheat.
The wheat and barley, the size will be totally irrelevant, I think, in the wheat and barley. It makes no difference. And it's, even if the barley is shalim and it's bigger, it doesn't matter because wheat is considered... The Gemara, I think it's the Gemara where the
one was, even if the pieces are bigger, you still make
it. Rabbi Yochanan says you have to make it on the Shleiman. And of course, according to Rabbi Yochanan, if they're the same size, you have to make it on the Shleiman. And of course, if the Shleiman are bigger. Whereas according to Rav Huna, if the Petitim are bigger, you must make it on them. If they're the same size, then you have an option. If the Shleiman are smaller, you make it on the Shleiman because they're bigger. Which means that according to this reading, Rav Huna thinks that bigger wins. And shleimus means nothing. And as according to Rav Huna, being shleimim doesn't get you anything. It makes absolutely no difference whether it's shleim or broken. It doesn't make a difference. Just look at the size. And if they're equal, then you pick either one. So shleimim is like counts for nothing. For Rabbi Yochanan, the size doesn't matter at all. All that matters is shleimus. At least within, when you're dealing with shleimim, there's absolutely no difference.
And from a philosophical perspective, like, we're talking about whole versus size. Like,
I think that it's that this is rooted primarily in a perception of human psychology, in that you want to give a bracha on the best part. So, and you know that there are different people in this world. Some people like to have a lot of things. A lot of people like to have a lot of things. That's our discussion earlier. Some people don't want a lot of things, but the things they want them to be good. It's different, two kinds of psychologies, And which one of those, you know...
Right, when you're making the bracha, right, you're not eating, right, in other words, you may not eat that whole large thing.
No, but the point is, you have an object in front of you, and you're saying thank you to God. So, which one, in effect, evokes that gratitude to a greater degree? That's what I would say, yeah.
If you have two whole pieces, and it's two people, but one happens to be really big, there's no way you can even eat more than that much. You don't want to waste it. You want to freeze it, whatever, and you have a smaller piece. You have to cut the bigger piece.
Well, ordinarily speaking, it's a very simple solution. Put the whole piece away.
And just take something smaller.
Yeah.
Shabbos,
you have a problem. Yes, on Shabbos.
Told you that Shabbos.
Right, on Shabbos, then, so again, it would then probably be appropriate to make on the shalim, on Shabbos, yes. Mm. Yeah.
The bigger one.
On the big, on the shalim, on the shalim.
No.
Even though you're not.
One is small.
Oh.
You don't want to cut the big one because it's you and your wife. You just said
you want to put that.
You want to put the
I have to check. I have to check. I don't know that we give any idea if it's the larger. La halacha. We pass it like Rabbi Yochanan. We pass it like Rabbi Yochanan, and it's not clear that Rabbi Yochanan says first shalim then size. I think Rabbi Yochanan may just say shalim. I have to check for sure.
So just going back to
the... I'll tell you even more of the Maisa, because I know we do this all the time.
Yeah.
Friday night, you have fewer people, you want to use a smaller one.
Right.
Right. So that's, if you get 20 away. Yeah. But of course we're using a smaller one. So I have to see if it says anything in the Shulchan Aruch. What?
You have to see if we're doing it right.
Right, that's right.
Size is based on weight, I assume.
If you were to ask me, I would be size would be based. I would say neither. I'd say it would be based upon perception. If I'm correct as the reason why, it's based upon your perception of it. In other words, it might be that it
which
could,
one's bigger or which one's better depends your
perception. No, in other words, if you had if you
objectively one could be bigger. Right? You have a matzah, you'd be a challah.
Well, that oh, so if you're talking about
depending on the quality of the matzah.
Yeah, I don't know. Okay. All right, so that's how Rashi reads the Gemara. Now, Tosfos does not like Rashi. If you take a look at the Tosfos, Dibur Maschel Mevarech, and Tosfos is going to say something that's going to strike you as very odd, I think. Perish Rashi, Im apetitim bashleimim shavim, yivarech al eze sheyirtze. Vim apetitim gedolim, tzorech levarech al apetitim, liftos hashleimim. It's an accurate citation of what we have in our Rashi. Avir Rabbi Yochanan amar al hashleimim mitzvah namuchar, afilu im apetitim gedolim tzveh. Doesn't matter, he cares about Shlema. That's what Rashi says. The Tema, Tosa says, it's strange. Im kein svara hafucha. It's totally opposite svaras. The rahuna petitim shein gedolam adifi, the Rabbi Yochanan shleim adifi. The ain svara loma de plebi behipuch svaras. So I'm sure that most of you are looking at this and are saying, what is Tosa talking about? Don't people always argue because they have a different opinion? So I believe what Tosa means here when he talks about people svaras, the Gemara has this idea for as an example on Shabbos, that you don't expect that if two Tanaim are debating about a particular issue on Shabbos, what its status is, you might get someone who says that it's Mutter and one person who says that it's Asa Mid Rabbanon. You might get one person who says it's Asa Mid Rabbanon and the one who says it's Asa Mid Araisa. What you're not likely to get is one person who says it's Mutter and one person who says it's Asa Mid Araisa. In other words, that they should be so far apart. Right? In other words, if Rav Huna were to say that Shleimim and Petitim are, Shleimus and size are equal, and Rabbi Yochanan says, no, Shleimus is all that matters, that makes sense. If Rav Huna were to say that all that matters is size, and Rabbi Yochanan were to say that size and Shleimus are equal, that would also be logical. But to say that Rav Huna holds that all that matters is size, and that Rabbi Yochanan holds that all that matters is Shleimus, that's too far apart. I mean, it's not such a compelling question. Right? There are more compelling questions that Tosfos asked, but that's what was bothering Tosfos. So the question is not as important as where Rabbeinu Tam goes with this, because it will affect the continuation of the reading of the Gemara. So therefore, Tosfos says, Al-Kain Perish Rabbein... Oh, no, I want to get the other question, because the other question is the textual observation. You notice there was a sleight of hand in the Gemara. What was the Machlokas of Rabbi Yochanan and Rav Huna about? It was about what and what? What did you have in front of you? Petitim and Shleimim. What was the Gemara when it says Avol Ledivrei Hakol? Everybody was Petachitim. What was the term?
Prusa
and Shalai. Is there a difference between Petitim
and Prusa?
So Tosa says Veod. I've got to find my place. Veod Tema My Shina B'Samach L'Shono Denakat L'Shon Prusa Shalchitim. Now I couldn't answer that question if I really wanted to. The way I would answer that question was based upon an observation that I made to you before. I said that the language of Avol, Prusa Shachitim, Shlema Shason, Derogar, Prusa, etc., is the Gemara speaking. So the first part, the Itmar part, Rav Huna said, Mevarach HaPetitim Barshim, and that was the language of Amoraim, and maybe the Stam of the Gemara chooses the word Prusa instead of Petitim. That's not a compelling answer, but if Rashi had to give an answer, that's what Rashi might say. But the reason why it's such language is because it's two different voices speaking, but nonetheless, Prusa and Petitim are the exact same thing. But however, Al-Kain Perish Rabbeinu Tam, Demairi B'Petitim Gidolim U'Shleimim Tetanim. Rabbeinu Tam says, no, Petitim means bigger pieces. It's two things. It's not Shalem, but it's bigger. And therefore, like Rashi, note that both Rashi, Rav Huna said, Mivarech upoter. Rav Yochanan said, Mitzvah min amufcha. So both Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam agree on this point, that whatever Rav Huna is talking about, he's talking about something that's optional. That's why Rashi begins with, Imrotza Mivarech al apetitim. That's what Rav Huna said. And by the way, Rashi says, and if the petitim were bigger, of course you would have to. Rabbeinu Tam agrees that when Rav Huna says Mevarech, it means you have a choice. Rabbi Yochanan is not a choice because it's mitzvah na mokar. So Rabbi Tam says, Vachi Perusho, Amar Rav Huna, Mevarech al aptitim, Klomar, in Yirtzeh, V'hu adin ala shleimim in Yirtzeh. In other words, for Rashi, it's when they're the same size that Rav Huna says, you can do either one. It doesn't matter. Whereas for Rabbeinu Tam, no. Dafka, if the pitim are bigger. So now, for Rav Huna, on the one hand, you have shleimus, which is meaningful. On the other hand, you have size, which is meaningful. So Rav Huna says, Shavin, you can pick either one. Either one's equal. However, Mevarech ha-ptitim im yirtzeh, v'hu adin ha-shleim im yirtzeh. But, and Rabbi Yochanan says, shleimim is ikar. But what that means is that even Rav Huna would agree, is if you have two things of the same size, and one of them is whole, and one of them is petitim, it can't be petitim, it's a prusa, then everyone agrees that you have to make the bracha on the shleimim. In other words, Rav Huna believes that there are two criteria that give something importance. Shleimus and size. And Rabbi Yochanan believes that there's only one. So what's the nafkamina between the two of them? The nafkamina is when you have a conflict of the two. When there's size versus shleimus. According to Rav Huna, you can pick either one. According to Rabbi Yochanan, you have to pick shleimus. But if there's no conflict, if they're the same size, and one is shleimim, one is tefitim, everybody agrees. Rav Huna is moda. To Rabbi Yochanan, you have to make a bracha on the shleimim. On the shalom. Okay, and then Tosfos says we pass like Rabbi Yochanan. So it means, at least according to Tosfos, and I'm pretty sure we pass him this way, meaning Tosfos versus Rashi, I would bet, I have to double check. So it means, according to Tosfos, Rav Chiya says that shleimus, this, if I'm correct, I have to check, but to answer our question, according to Rav Huna, we don't paskin like, shleimus and size are both legitimate criteria. When they butt heads, you can pick either one you want. When one of them is present, not the other, you have to pick that one. So in that case, according to Rav Huna, the way Tosfos reads, if you had a small challah and a big challah, you have to make the bracha on the big challah first. Whereas according to the way Tosfos reads Rav Yochanan, so all that matters is shleimus. And therefore, you can pick either one. Now, there is another way of reading Tosfos that wouldn't necessarily lead to that very convenient conclusion, which would be that Tosfos would say that no, shleimus and size are both meaningful, but shleimus means more than size. So if you only have one, you're supposed to pick that one. But if you have both, then you have to pick Shleimim. Whereas Rav Huna said, no, if you have both, you can pick whichever one you want. So I think the pashtus of Tosfos is that size doesn't matter. All that matters is Shleimim in this context. Okay. Now, so the Gemara said then, everybody would agree that, and let's, for the moment, we'll read like Rabbeinu Tam, that if you have a loaf of barley bread, and a loaf of wheat bread, but the loaf of barley bread is whole, and the loaf of wheat bread is a prusa, which is the same size, but it's not whole. Everybody agrees that you make the bracha on the wheat. But, and why? The Gemara doesn't say here, I don't think, anywhere, but Tosfos says, because it's kodem b'pasuk. Right? It comes first in the parash, eretz chito sera, which has a value later in the parash we're going to see, that kala kodem b'pasuk is kodem l'bracha.
So it doesn't go in terms of what is a preferred food there.
Chaviv, right? No, it doesn't go by chaviv. You're supposed to go.
I'm saying, though, in terms of the bread piece of it, that in those ma'achal behema. So,
listen, you do make a bracha on chita first.
Right, but what do you need a pasuk?
True. It's true. In the Gemara itself, you could have argued just as I said. You don't have to. Tosfos is going to vote the pasuk for whatever reason. Okay. So now the Gemara Amar of Yirmiyah Baraba Kitanoi. This machlokas is ambiguous. We have to talk about what this machlokas is. Is the same as the following machlokas hatanaim in Truma, which we'll read in a second. Now the question is, when the Gemara says kitanoi, and it's lining up two opinions with the two opinions in this Mishnah Braisa, it's a Mishnah, let me rephrase that. Kitanoi can be used in one of two ways. Kitanoi can be you have a machlokas amoraim, and you want to say the machlokas amoraim, you make, as they say in Beis Menesh language, a tushtel to the machlokas atanaim, the correspondence, you line them up, and say this amora holds like this tana, that amora holds like the other tana. You can also have the Gemara make a point and say that such and such a thing is mutter, such and such a thing is asr, and the Gemara will say kitanoi, but that, whether it's asr or mutter, itself really is a machlokas atanoi, without actually lining up other shitas. So the Gemara has both. So both Rashi and Tosfos insist here. There are the Rishonim definitely, but they insist that Kitanoi here is not going back on Rav Huna and Rabbi Yochanan. but rather it's going on the chita and the saura piece. That's all it's going on. And we will explain, we'll have to explain why. If the truth is, why Rashi says that is not as clear. Where Rabbeinu Tam says it is crystal clear. The Braisa that we're about to quote in Truma is going to have a situation where you have to decide what you're going to separate as the item to give to the Kohen. And the two opinions each believe that you have to do their opinion. It's not that one opinion says A instead of and not B, and the other says A or B. One says A and not B, one says B and not A. If you are Tosos, you may realize immediately why that cannot be the Machlokas Rav Huna and Rav Yochanan. Because remember that according to Tosos, the Machlokas Rav Yochanan and Rav Huna is Rav Yochanan says A and not B, and Rav Huna says A or B. So Rav Huna cannot line up with one of these two opinions. Even the Gemara in the end is going to say it doesn't work out. But the Havamina, the possibility of lining them up, Rashi, Tosis, Rabbeinu Tam, for obvious reasons, Rashi, it's not as clear why. Rashi doesn't tell us why, but he does say explicitly. Rashi says, Kitanoi, Hada, if you look at Rashi, the fourth line, Hada Amris, Prusa Shalchitim, Mishleim, Shalsorim, that you're Mavarech Alachitim, maybe Rav Huna and Rav Yochanan agree on that issue, but not all the Tanoim do. For Rabbeinu Tam, it's clear why you have to read that way, because in order to find a correspondence, you have to have one says A, one says B, but that's not what Rav Huna and Rav Yochanan have. One says A, and one says A or B, and that can't line up even if logically it lined up, it cannot line up in din with the following Mishnah. So let's read. Kitanoi. Yes, it's a Mishnah. Tormin batzel katan shalem avalochatzi batzel gadol. Now, I'm going to explain, just going to go within Tosfos here, not with Rashi, and that might not surprise you what Rashi says here. How big is the chatzi batzel gadol? I have two choices. I'm giving Truma to a Kohen. I can give him a small whole onion, or I can give him a chatzi batzel gadol. I can give him half of a big onion. So I'm going to go with Tosfos' interpretation here. It means the half of the big onion is the same size as the small onion. Right? Presumably, that's why the Gemara formulated it this way. Chatzi batzel gadol, because it's equal to batzel katan. In addition to which, presumably, when you decide to give truma, this may not be true, but you decide to give a certain amount. So I want to give a 1/50. So if one small onion is 1/50, then presumably, if I'm going to be giving part of a big onion, I'm going to give the same amount. Yeah. Okay. So the Tanakhama says... Well, so there, I'm going to invoke Tosis. Yes, but if you're miserly, it's true, but since there's a mitzvah to give the good part to the Kohen, Bahari Mechem Eschelbo Mimenu, so that's how Tosis makes the analogous to wheat and barley. Each one has a pasuk that suggests a preference, an adifus. So the Tanakhama says that you give him a batzel katam shalom and alachati batzel gadol. And Tosis says that batzel gadol, what's the advantage of why you ever give mechati batzel gadol? The answer is because apparently the bigger onions were better. They tasted better than the small onions. So Rabbi Yehuda Omer lo ki elachatzi batzel gadol. Rabbi Yehuda says it's better to give them the better qualities. So my love, b'ha'kam makalbi, kamipalgi, the machlokes of Yehuda and the Tanakhama is the following: the mar savar choshev adif, umar savar shalem adif. One believes that the better species. Something that's more chashev, I shouldn't have said better species. Something that's more chashev is better, and the other one says something that's whole is better. So it's easy to see how that maps to chitim and sarim. For though there is an opinion in Rishonim that this is Rav Huna Rabbi Yochanan, and you'd have to say that Rav Huna considers gadol as chashev. Okay, that's not inconceivable. That's not so hard to imagine. But that's what the Gemara suggests. So we're going to read just with Rabbeinu Tam, which is that if you are Rabbi Yehuda and you say it's better to give the Kohen a chatzi batzel gadol because that's better, you would say it's better to make the bracha on the chitim. If you are the Tanakhama, who says that it's better to give a lesser quality but whole onion, then you would make the bracha on the whole loaf of barley. So the Gemara says, wrong. Hecha de'ika Kohen. And when the Kohen is present in front of us and you're giving him the Truma, Kule Alma lo pligi de Choshev Adif. Everybody would agree that the Choshev is better, meaning the half of the big onion, because that's better. Ki pligi de Leka Kohen. Let's say there's no Kohen right now, so what am I doing with the onion? I'm putting it aside to store it. So, Ditzanan, Komakom Sheyesh Kohen, Torei min hayofa. When the kohen is present, you're supposed to give from the best of the truma. Baharin chem eschel bo mimenu. She'ein, v'chol makom she'ein kohen, if the kohen, there are no kohanim around right now, torei min hameskayim. Better to take the truma for something that will last longer. And that's true. You have an onion that's not cut, you can leave it out in your counter for days and weeks, and you know, at some point it starts to grow that thing. But if you cut it open, that's not such a good idea. Onions seem to be a magnet for bacteria. Open cut onions. I don't know what it is, but they... Okay, so Rabbi Yehuda Omer ain't Torim Element Hayafa. So that maps perfectly to this. So the answer is no. The issue of Chitim Tzorim, if you're going to map it to Truma, if you're going to assume that the same bit of Truma would apply here, all the Tanaim would say you make a bracha on the chitim. In other words, in effect, it would be kulei alma. It would still work out. Everybody would agree that the chashiv is adif. The only question is if you're worried about something that has to last, which is not your concern by the bread, it's only your concern by the truma and the onions, then there might be a reason when there are no kohanim around to take the less chashiv one, but because it's miskayim, because it's to the kohen's benefit. Okay. So now, Amar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, V'yirei Shamayim Yotzei Yidei Shneihem. Rav Nachman says that someone who is a Yirei Shamayim, who's truly medakik in halacha, who'll try to get both opinions. Now, which is Yotzei Yidei Shneihem? So this is a machlokas HaRishonim. Rashi says, Rav Huna Rabbi Yochanan. And I think, I don't remember which Tosus. Tosus might say the opposite. What's that?
Are they talking still about the onions?
No. That's what I'm talking. Let me explain. According to Rabbeinu Tam, this has to be talking about the wheat and the barley. It can't be talking about Rav Huna and Rabbi Yochanan the way Rashi says. Let me explain why. If you read like Rabbeinu Tam, that Rabbi Yochanan's position is that you must, and Rav Huna only says in some cases you may. In other words, Rav Huna says when you have a piece that's bigger, but not whole, and you have a whole loaf that's smaller, Rav Huna says, you know, eater's choice. And Rabbi Yochanan says, no, you have to make the bracha on the shalem. So there's no chiddush to saying, what is the Yirei Shemayim? How's Yotzei both? So the Gemara explains, what he would do is he'd put them together, he'd wrap one around the other, and then he'd take a piece, Rashi says, and most Rishonim say, of the big one, and if you want, you could be poris both. So basically, you want to be yotzei both shitos. So you're being mevarech on the prusa and the shlema. So Rabbeinu Tam says that what we're talking about here is wheat and barley, not a regular case of petitim and shlema. Why? Because according to Rabbeinu Tam, if you want to be Yotzei Yidei Shneihem, you know what you do? Follow Rav Yochanan. Because Rav Huna doesn't say you're not allowed to make the bracha on the shalom. He just says you don't have to. So if one shita says mutter, one shita says usher, Yirei Elokim Yotzei Shneihem, you just machmer, you hold like the usher one. So it doesn't make sense. There's no reason to put the prusa within the shlema and make the bracha. Just take the shlema and make the bracha. Only Rashi can explain that the Yirei Elokim Yotzei Shneihem goes back to Rav Yochanan. Because according to Rashi, when the petitim are bigger than the shleimim, Rabbi Yochanan says you must make it on the shleimim. Rav Huna says you must make it on petitim. So now you're stuck between a rock and a hard place. You got to come up with this clever solution. But if according to Rabbeinu Tam, the solution is simple: just be machmir. That's easy done. Just make it on the shleimim. So that's why Rashi says, if you look at Rashi, Yotzei Yidei Shneihem Yidei Machlokas Rav Huna and Rabbi Yochanan. But Tosfos explicitly, I didn't come up with the logic. Tosfos explicitly explains that you can't, for a bit of time, you can't say that. It has to be with chitim and seorim. With chitim and seorim, the way you get around the problem that, because we hold it really supposed to make on the shleimim. The problem is the chitim is better. So you know what you do? You wrap one on the other, and so you make the brachas on both, and you both say it either from the shalim or from both of them. From the shalim, right, okay. So that's how they read this line. Then the Gemara says, "Tani kame no nachma by Yitzchak maniach haprusa b'toch hashlem b'botzea." The word of mevarech shouldn't be there because you make the bracha before the botzea. Amar le mashimcha Rav Nachman Yitzchak said to the Tana. A Tana is a brisa reciter. The two meanings. I've probably said this before, but it's worth repeating. There are two meanings to the word Tana and two meanings to the word Amora. The way most of us use the word in our daily language, hopefully, is that a Tana is a sage of the Mishnaic period. Tana's name will appear in Brises and Mishnayos and so on. And Amora is someone later who will appear in the Gemara. The other meaning of Tana, the other kind of Tana, lived during the Amoraic period. His job was a memorizer of brisos. He had a good memory. Some of them you would see were blind, actually, which is not a surprise. And his job was just to recite Mishnayos and to preserve the text of the Mishnayos and the brisos orally. It would appear it was a text, but not a written text. And an Amora, you also find, I don't know, you could have had an Amora in the Tanaitic period as well. This Tana you wouldn't have probably had in the Tanaitic period. But an Amora is a microphone. In other words, the Chacham would give the drasha, but he wasn't going to shout, it wasn't Pakavadik, he didn't have to shout at the Tzibor. Say the guy next to him, he would say, Rav said and Shmuel said, and the Amora would blast out to the people. In fact, that you find in Hilchos Avelos, I believe, when a person is, you're not allowed to learn or teach Torah when you're an Avel, especially teach Torah, even Dina Avelos, but let's say Rabim Tzrichim Lo, if the community needs it, there's no way to add it, so then he's allowed to teach, but I think they say that he shouldn't use an Amora. Right? Really? Really? In the Amoraic period?
No, very early. The person who was going to do the sign language for the deaf. So Chevy Chase would go, our top story tonight, and Garrett Morris would go, our top story.
Okay, there you go.
What does Amora mean?
Amora? It probably means to say. It's Al Memresh.
Yeah.
Atana means to repeat.
Yeah, repeat.
Okay. So anyway, Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak says to the Tana, he says, Mashimcha, what's your name? Amar Lei Shalman. So Amar Lei Shalomata Ushlema Mishnascha Shesanta Shalom Beina Talmidim. Okay, fine. You are peaceable. Your Mishnah is whole, which is, of course, great in this context, right? Because it's Prusa and Shalom.
Yeah.
And you have placed Shalom Beina Talmidim. They don't have to choose which side to pick. We can do both. Fine. Amar Papa. I didn't skip in here. No. Amar Papa, Komo dim Pesach, Sheminiach Prusa Botoch Shlema Ubotzea. Everybody agrees that on Pesach you're supposed to put the Prusa and the Shlema together. Rabbi Yochanan would say, yes, you need to do that. And then you make the bracha. Why? My taima, and then Botzea, my taima, Lechem Onikzim. So we've already explained. So there are lots of different sheets. You look at Tosos, there are different sheets here, but I'll tell you what the procedure of the Mishnah Berurah describes, what one is supposed to do, actually, bottom line for the matzahs. So I really should remind you this before Pesach. If someone asks me then, I'll repeat it. Because we have three, and we think that we want Lecha Mishnah for Lel Yom Tov, so you pick up all three matzahs, meaning the top matzah, the prusa in the middle, and the shlema on the bottom. And you make the bracha of hamotzi, since the hamotzi is going on the lechem mishnah. You make the bracha hamotzi, the hamotzi is going on the lechem mishnah that you have for the meal. You then put aside the bottom matzah, and then on the top two matzahs, you make the bracha of alachilas matzah, and you break off from each of them to give, you know, to eat. If you were eating yourself alone, you would just break off a piece of each one, and that's you would eat the matzah, or distribute a piece of each one to everybody. And then, subsequently, the lower matzah is used for korech. But the way you do the betziah is all three matzahs in hand for the bracha motzi, put the bottom matzah down, and the shalim and the prusa, you make the bracha achilas matzah, and you korech from it. Okay. Fine. Now the Gemara continues. Amar Rabbi Abba, u'b'shabes chayv adam livtzoa al shtei kikaros. On Shabbos, you have to have two loaves of bread, Maitaima. Lechem Mishneh, Ksiv. Okay, you have a double portion of double bread, double portion of food. So, Amar Ravashi, Chazir Elein Rav Kahana, the Nakitarti, Ubatzachada. He would hold both of them, and then break one. Meaning, just because he's only going to eat from one, he would still hold both of them and made the bracha. Presumably because the Lechem Mishneh theme. Rav Zeira have a batza akula sherusa. Rav Zeira, so apparently the normal way you would eat the bread, you would eat a loaf of bread. And here I think he's talking about not for everybody, but just for himself. Normally the way you eat a piece of bread is you break off a piece, you eat it. You break off another piece, you eat it. But Rav Zeira on Shabbos broke off the entire piece that he would eat for the meal. So akula sherusa, for the entire meal. So Amar le Ravin le Ravashi, It's not their cheretz. It looks like, you know, you're a glutton. You rip off an entire piece of bread like that. So, Amar Le, Ravashi responded to Ravina that Rav Zera did that was not a problem. You know why? Came in the chol yoma lo ka'avid. When he eat during the week, he didn't do it that way. He only did it on Shabbos. It's not going to be interpreted in that fashion. Okay, fine. Ravami Rabiasi ki hava misrami lehu rishka de'iruva mivarchan alah hamotzi lachem in aret. If they happen to, by chance, come across the bread from the Eruv, which would be an Eruv Chaseros in their case, it could be an Eruv Tashimun as well, but so they tried to eat that bread. The Suda Shabbos, why? They said, hold this Avid Bey Mitzvah Chada, Navid Bey Mitzvah Chrisa. We're already done with it. Let's do one more mitzvah with it. Okay, kind of how you distinguish this between the concept of Ein Osen Mitzvah Chavilos Chavilos, which is its own topic, which actually is quoted in one of our Tosfos in here. I don't know exactly, but let's say, you know, it's not the more pieces of bread the merrier, the more mitzvahs on this one piece of bread, the better it is. Josh?
You've spoken about this before, just remind me of the Eruv and the...
The Eruv Chaseros?
Yeah.
The Eruv Chaseros basically means that we have a common courtyard with different houses. Everything that derises the Rishus HaYachid, and therefore you should have to carry back and forth into the courtyard, into this next person's house. But the Chachamim were afraid that since they're separate Rishus HaYachid, separate owners, a person will say, if I'm allowed to be Motzi from one Rishus HaYachid to a different Rishus HaYachid, I could also be Motzi from Rishus HaYachid to Rishus HaRab. So in order to be able to carry between two different Rishus HaYachid, two different Rishus HaYachid means two different ownerships. If you have two houses, if you own every house in the Chatzer, you'll have one house Aaron for each day of the week that you live in. So you don't need neighbors. But you have different people, different families, not the same family, that have joint ownership of the chatzer, joint usage of the chatzer. So then they have to become one big happy family for Shabbos. And the way they do that is they take everybody, every family, every household contributes some bread to the Eruv. There's a certain amount, minimal amount. And then that basket of bread is put in one of the person's houses. And it's like everybody really lives there. And then you can carry into the chatzer, from a chatzer into the house. You could always carry within the chatzer. Carrying within the chatzer is not a problem, even for that neighbor. It's carrying from a house into the chatzer, get from one house to another house, that's where you have a problem. So the Eruv, in order to have an Eruv, what we talk about, you need both walls, which in normal, we have a fictional Eruv. They had a real, we have fictional walls. They had real walls. It was a courtyard. It was enclosed. So it's not, no question, it was a Rosh Hashayachid without any doubt. But I jokingly say, you know, they have a hotline, the Eruv is down. The Eruv could be down, but the Eruv is never down. The wires might be down. You might not have mechitzos. But the Eruv would be down only if somebody went into a house and ate the box of matzahs. Then the Eruv would be down the hatch or something like that. Now, the interesting thing here, that's what the Eruv Chaseros is. And the interesting thing is that the Ramah does quote this in Shulchan Aruch, but the Ramah says that that's only if it's a place where they make the Eruv every Shabbos. But if they use the Eruv week after week, then you're not supposed to eat it for the meal, because otherwise it's going to disappear. And then, you know, if when Shabbos starts, once the Eruv is there, Bein Hashmashos, the beginning of Shabbos, said anything, we don't care what happens to the Eruv. The Chitzos we would care about, but not the Eruv, not the bread. But next Shabbos, it won't be there. So you're going to have to make a new Eruv. So one of the things that struck me as interesting, I'm really curious. I always thought that our matzahs, which last forever, the hard matzahs, are very recent. But I don't know what the Rama is thinking of, because he's thinking of some food that's going to last week after week after week. It's got to be edible. So I'm curious.
Well, in theory, it wouldn't have to last forever. It would just have to last more than 1 week.
Right? Yeah, yes. But it sounds like the Rama doesn't sound like you're doing it once every other week.
Yeah,
it sounds like you're doing
whatever. Who knows what they have.
Right, but bread will go.
It has to be edible.
Yeah, it has to be edible.
Remain edible.
What's that?
Sort of hard bread that lifts the
different. I guess. I mean, maybe they had some. Maybe they did. They had some kind of hard breads that stayed a long time. I don't know. Okay, but be that as it may, so the Ramah says if they make a new Eruv every week, that's great. Then there's a mitzvah to eat Eruv, but otherwise not. I think for us, we would say an Eruv Tafshilin is included in this, because you don't make, you know, your Eruv. Firstly, al pi din, you may not need bread for the Eruv Tafshilin anyway in the first place. It's only a chumra of Rabbeinu Tam. And if you're not baking, you don't need bread. You only need bread if you want to bake. I think pretty much everybody makes an Eruv Tafshilin, makes a new one every Yom Tov that needs it. They don't rely upon, you know, firstly, you have to make the Eruv again anyway. What?
You're supposed to eat it, right?
You're not supposed to, but it's an Indian. I would say it's an Indian of eating it.
It's like the same thing here of doing two mitzvahs.
Yeah, yeah, that's all it is. That comes from this. Yeah, that is this. Right, so I'm extending it from Erev Chatzeres to Erev Chatzivim. Why would you do that? You take one of your challahs. You just want to make sure by the Erev Tavshilin you don't want to eat it till Shabbos,
right?
Because you have to have at least a kezias left in order for the Erev Tavshilin to work for you. Okay.
They have in Israel again. If you always talk, you asked about it. They have from the 18th century. They have a Riva Chatzeres. They have a look like a challah cover, but it has sections for each house, and it's designated. It's fascinating. It's 18th century. It's the only example of it in the world. It's 200 years old. I think
right.
It's a large
one. Right. Well, today, again, somebody takes it, buys a box of matzah, and then another person picks it up on behalf of everybody in the town, the Zocha, and done. Right. You don't have to have everybody contribute. As long as someone is willing to contribute for the amount of bread, which is a minimum, I think, of a grogeres per house, up to two matzah and shtei sudas. I don't know how many grogeres that is. So once you have that, Mazon Shei Sudos, you don't need any more in it. So if someone's happy to donate Mazon Shei Sudos, you need the person to buy it, someone else to be Kona from him, Mizaka for everybody else, and then you're done. So that's the way we do it today, and that box of matzah probably goes a very long time. Okay, so now the Gemara says on the top of Mem Amud Aleph, Amar Rav, Tol Bruch, take, and take from the bracha. They not make a bracha, but take from the prusas habracha. So Rashi explains that if before the botzea actually eats himself, he hands out, he's getting somebody's attention, says, take from the prusa that I made the bracha on. Even though he's talking, you don't have to make another bracha, because it's not considered a hefsek. However, havei melach, havei lifton, tzarech levarech. If you said, bring salt, or bring condiments, so you have to make another bracha, because it's not really necessary. Then Rav Yochanan Amar, that was Rav said, Rav Yochanan Amar, filo havi melech, havi liftan, nami ein tzarech levarech. He says, you still don't, that's not a hefsek, because you want the bread to be eaten properly, to taste good. But, he says, give gavi l'tore, he made a bracha, and he says, oops, I didn't give Fido his food. So he tells him, make him his loaf, so, because we want to eat it, it's not appropriate to eat if you haven't fed your animals. So that tzarech levarech, and Rav Shesha Samar, afilu gavil aturin amay tzarech levarech. Even if you tell him to feed the animals, the Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, also la adam sheyochal kodem sheyitein machal abehenta. You're not allowed to eat before you fed your animals. Shenemar v'nasati esed the sadachal devem techa, and then v'hadar v'achalta v'sabata. It's a very important muster here. It's not only true when it comes to the animals; it's also true when it comes to the help. If people are helping serve, the appropriate thing to do, and I think this is a minhag in restaurants, not Jewish thing, that before they, at least some restaurants, before they serve the meal, the chef and all the people in the kitchen, you know, have to eat. The Gemara in Ksubas talks about this, how the Amoraim were makbid to give to the people serving them, to the shamash, they would give stuff. And the Gemara there says that there were two Amoraim had a different minhag. One used to give them enough food, but of one thing, you give them one food, enough to eat. And the other was makbid to give from each of the things that was there, which is much nicer. And the Gemara says that Mar, you know, one of them Eliyahu used to come and learn with, and the other one Eliyahu didn't used to come and learn with. So the Gemara is telling us is that when you are blessed to have, and you have other people who are really providing for you and serving you, you need to be sensitive to them and make sure that they're not in a position of where it's uncomfortable them, or where you're eating and they're hungry and that's not appropriate. The root in the Torah of this, by the way, probably is two places, two mitzvahs. One is losachsom shorbedisho, not muzzle an ox when it's threshing. You have to let the animal eat. And I think related to that is it's sort of equivalent when it comes to people, which is the din of poel ochel min haTorah. That when you have workers working in the field, if it's at the end stage of the produce when it's attached to the ground, or if it's detached from the ground but it's not gemar malacha yet, it doesn't have been processed, so it's not chayav in trumas maisus yet, the poel is allowed to eat from what he is working on. It's two psukim in Parshas Dvarim. Both of those are a little bit of a reminder, going back to the discussion right before Shir, is that kili haaretz, that everything ultimately belongs to God. The Gemara in Bava Metzia actually has a whole sugya about when the poel is entitled to eat min haTorah, is he eating of the Baal HaBayis or is he eating Mishel Shamayim? It's a long sugya, important chakira there, but certainly al derech hamusar, so we're all ochel min shamayim, so we should always recognize that.
Well, the source was because Rivka gave the camels to drink. No, she drank first, but she gave the camels to eat first.
That is, no.
And then that famous one, she
gave him first and then gave the camel. So there's a discussion about that. I remember somebody says maybe from the Kalim, I don't remember what it is, but the difference there also is that her responsibility was to him before the camels. If he were the one with the water, he may be supposed to give it to the camels first. But it's from she. Listen, when your choice is feeding a human being or feeding an animal, it's very clear. Your first responsibility is to feed something, a being created with Tzelem Elokim, before the animal. But you, as the Baal HaBayis, who want to eat yourself, your responsibility is to feed your animals before you feed yourself.
I think it's also because if a human being can live without water, but can live without food.
Okay. All right. Any other questions?
No.